Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Turn the Page. I'm your host today, Jen, and I am here with, let's say, the brain behind an exciting new convention coming to New York. Could I ask you to introduce yourself and your project, please?
Hi, my name is Dave Hoffman, and I'm the producer of the Catastrophicon Rock and Roll Horror Convention. It is a new, brand new convention. It's coming to Purchase, New York, which is in Westchester County. It's coming July 15th to the haunted halls of Reed Castle on the campus of Manhattanville College in Purchase. What it is, it's kind of, we're bringing a lot of things together. It's a horror convention, horror and rock and roll. We're really trying to capture an attitude. We wanted something a little more edgy, a little more kind of a wink to subversiveness. And, you know, we're driven by spirit that of a term I coined called fanboy energy. And that's that insatiable drive of super fans to get closer to their favorite franchises and artists using their own creativity. So we have guests from some of the classic horror movies, especially from the 80s. So we have Ari Lehman, who was Jason in the original Friday the 13th, which is fitting because it's our first event. So he's the first Jason. He is going to be playing the actual climax of the show is going to be his heavy metal band, First Jason. They're really awesome, really thematic. It really plays to the whole concept that this show's about because he took this idea. I interviewed him a few weeks ago, and he wasn't even really an actor when he appeared in Friday the 13th. It wasn't his thing. He was a musician. So he was a jazz musician doing world music. And he was traveling the world, played like reggae sunsplash and things like that. He told me after September 11th, that particular career path was getting difficult because there was travel restrictions. And around that time, he also found out that people were forging his signature, forging his autograph on eBay. And he didn't even know that world existed. He didn't know that people bought autographs or wanted his autograph. And so he took a look at the con world. And so he decided to get involved because there was a demand for him, especially him being the first guy to play Jason. If you've ever met a Friday the 13th fan, they are very dedicated and they want all those autographs. And so that was where he got the idea of First Jason. And First Jason's a heavy metal band, and heavy metal is a good kind of music for a virtuosic musician because he can really go in a lot of different directions. And then at the same time, he went with this whole theme of a immortal serial killer. And it was a great, I love that creativity. I like the idea that he took this one idea, went in a different direction. He took his assets that he had, meaning his past being in that movie, and then his skills now, and he applied it to a problem, and he found a great solution that found a new lane to go in. So when I talk about fanboy energy, that's really like the pinnacle of what it is. And I was lucky. He was one of the first people I reached out about this. Before COVID, I had run the Hudson Valley Music Summit, which was a business-to-business conference for music industry professionals, for anyone who's behind the scenes in promoting a musician's career. And so that was to find that connection between music and horror was really something I was looking for because I wanted to see if I could kind of stay in that area and bring back that other conference one day. So that's kind of the one of the first places where this all started. But we also have Beatrice Bopley, who played Freddy Krueger's mother. We have recently confirmed John Dugan, who was Grandpa in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is one of my favorites, one of my favorite characters. We have a Warriors reunion. There's going to be six of them. They've been around various configurations, but I think this configuration of six is a unique one. We have Thomas G. Waits, another musician. His band is going to be playing before Ari's. He was also in The Thing. He played Fox, who was one of the main guys in the Warriors. We have David Harris, who played Cochise, and Terry Mikos, who played Vermin of the Warriors. We also have Apache Ramos, who was one of the Orphans, a different gang. Fernando Castillo, who was the messenger for the Gramercy Riffs. Anton Pagan, who was one of the Boyle Street Runners. And he had a very short role in the Warriors, just kind of a brief shot. But I want to mention him because, again, to this whole idea of fanboy energy and moving in different directions, I was talking to him at a con the other day, and, you know, I saw on his on his IMDb that he was an uncredited dancer in Saturday Night Fever. And I love that movie. It's one of my favorites. And I told him, and he kind of went off about he's a dancer. You know, that's something he really enjoys. He was also in Dirty Dancing and other movies. And so he told me that he wants to do a dance lesson at the Catastrophicon of the Saturday Night Fever dance. He said it's based on a dance called the Bus Stop. The next day, I talked with this person named Uncle Undead, and he is going to run our cosplay contest. And so suddenly my brain exploded, and I think we're going to do a dance lesson right after the cosplay contest where everyone's in costume. So I'm telling you these stories because I'm trying to give the essence of what I want to bring to the table with this convention. There's horror conventions all over the place, and they're all great. When I differentiate what I'm trying to do from what they're trying to do, don't take it as me disparaging them because I love those. But one thing to kind of bear in mind is that once an event gets real big, they become a little calcified, and I don't say that in a negative way. It just means they've got their thing. They know what they're doing. Their fans know what to expect. This is a brand new event, which means we can go in any different direction we want, right? A lot of people want to get the autographs. They're your amateur curators. And when I say amateur in a nice way, like the people who need all those. I used to think it was a little weird people needing all these autographs. I just didn't understand it. Now that I've gone into this world, I realize they are curators. They very, very targeted as to why they need this person's autograph on 12 different items. It's not maybe there's a little bit of obsessiveness too, because we all have that. So the real lesson here right now, I want it to be this, I don't even know what you call it. I want it to be, Catastrophicon. We're rebuild, even though nothing's broken, we're still rebuilding a new event and seeing what sticks. Right, what's going to happen? Is the dancing going to be the favorite thing? Maybe that's the direction we go in. We don't know. I've been telling people because it's now only 3 weeks away, so I'm thinking about next year. And the best part about next year is that I will be able to turn to the people who were there this year. So I don't just have to get everyone's opinion and then kind of hope about what's going to work. I will know who's committed, who will make the effort to be there because it's that important to them. And then that's who you listen to. And then we can go in the direction. What I'm hoping is that we'll hear some feedback about things that aren't happening at the other shows, and we can find our own little niche. Right now, I would say that niche is creativity and discovery of creativity. So creative collisions is sort of what I call it. I'm hoping people meet each other with different skills and come up with something new, get inspired. And inspiration is a big thing I want to go for. I want to go for with this. And that's really it. We want to know what direction it's gonna, we don't know what direction the future is gonna hold. I hope to hold on to that. Another thing we're doing, which I haven't seen much of in other shows, is this particular event was part of an incubator, a startup incubator that the County of Westchester ran called Launch 1000. And so they're gonna be, this was during COVID when everything was closed down. They were helping people who had, didn't lost their jobs or just had business ideas in those circumstances. And this was the second round that they ran this after things opened up. And they're going to be running a panel on entrepreneurship for pop culture professionals, because this was one example of that. And I actually think it is a little challenging to take your creative output and find an audience. It's a little bit tricky because really, to make it sustainable, you need an audience. You need to treat it like a business. It's not going to work otherwise. But at the same time, the question comes, I'm a creator. How am I going to make sure that what I'm doing here is the creativity that I value and that I want to do now that I'm getting paid for it? How do I, because you might as well just get a job as a copywriter if you're not doing what is coming from your soul. And super fans get that they want to find someone who is writing from their soul. That's why you're fans. That's why you want to hear what they have to say. And so we have that panel. We have a panel on crowdfunding for creative projects. We are trying. So I'm trying to put that in there. Hopefully this will be more than just this. As I've said before, it's for creative super fans. It's for fans. It's for everybody. And we're going to see what direction it goes. I just want to kind of, everyone who goes in the door, we want to hear from you, and we want you to get inspired and tell us what you got out of it.
That sounds so cool. Like, there's so much exciting stuff happen, and I'm really interested in how collaborative it sounds, because you are going to people and pitching your ideas to them, and then they are coming to you with their ideas, it kind of sounds like, and it's all kind of bubbling and fermenting and creating this cool event. So this started several years ago, it sounds like, if you started during the pandemic, were there, having done other big events, were there things that you were prepared for, but were there also things that surprised you or like new challenges that presented themselves? Like what has been the, you know, what's the planning process like this been like?
Now, that's a great question because I, on the one hand, you want to be a little bit of a dream catcher and you want to grab those things that you didn't think of because that's the whole point of it. But my background is in corporate events. So I've been producing business-to-business conferences since 2006. And if I were to go to my comfort zone, it is bringing together wealth managers and institutional investors and writing content that they're interested in on the capital markets, the investment world. And then that is sprinkled in with sponsors from asset managers who want to sell their product to them. It's a very simple dynamic, right? We call it buy side and sell side, which is sort of lifted from the financial world. The pitch is sort of clear. You're either coming here to find best practices on what your colleagues are doing in the industry so that you are able to give that to your clients or whoever you work for, or you're trying to sell your product to those folks. And that's it. That's all I'm used to. And it takes a lot of work. When I got into the Hudson Valley Music Summit, I mean, it's sort of a long story. My own career was feeling a little stagnant because really once, like I just explained, that it's sort of a simple dynamic. So once you kind of figure it out, it is very repetitive and you're doing a lot of outreach to get people involved. And the competition is very commodified. The other investment events out there are very similar. So it's really who can make more phone calls and who could be more charming on the phone. Hopefully, I like to think I can do some good writing in terms of the agenda researching. That's my specialty. But that was all I was doing. It felt like the same thing year after year. Wasn't sure how to get ahead. And I got a little frustrated. I guess I'm going to tell my story because that's why we're here. And this is where it came from because I do, if I could come up with this, if I have this event Catastrophicon now, maybe someone else wants to break out of their rut. I think that's a common thing in corporate America. So I found that although I wasn't getting promoted at all over the course of my career, I was moving sort of from job to job laterally, even though I knew what I was doing. The new folks at all these companies would come to me and ask for advice and what the hell's going on around here. These companies have very low overhead, so they were a little bit wild west in how they ran. And I got frustrated because I'm like, man, I've been doing this for like 8, 9 years now, and I can't find a degree to get that would make me more better at this, and I can't find a book on this. And I suddenly realized, well, maybe if there's no book on this, maybe that's what I could do. So I thought of all the questions people were asking me, and I made notes and wrote a little table of contents, and I wrote a book. I wanted to change the calculus of my career. Instead of having a job title, I wrote the first and only, but still, it's the only book on this particular role, being a conference producer for a company that does it for its own proprietary conferences. It's called Producing Success, a Career Guide for Conference Producers. And I wrote this book, put it out there on, well, not, I put it on Amazon, market it on LinkedIn, and I have been able to sell it on 6 continents. And people would come to me and say, hey, thank you for writing this book. And I was shocked that this worked. There's only, you know, probably like a couple of thousand people who would even be interested, and I've sold a couple hundred. So I think it was a success. And after I wrote that, I wanted to see what else I could do next. What's the next project? Okay, so I've changed the calculus a little bit. Now I'm an author. It's not just like an expert, you know, it kind of makes you look like an expert because you wrote the book on it. But also I'm an author. I had been a writer before, but now I self-published. I have these new skill set. How do I build that out? And so I'd been a singer-songwriter for my whole life. And I called a friend of mine who was in a band, and I said, could you help me produce these songs professionally, right? So my friend got me some musicians and studio, and you know, talked me through the process. I wanted to see what happened if I had more product. So I came up with I recorded 5 songs and I put them on a CD. And during this time also, I really wanted to take this seriously. What I wanted was a new product to sell online, to learn how to sell things online, right? That was the idea. So production, marketing, and I didn't want to come across like a midlife crisis. You know, I didn't want to call this Dave Hoffman's Awesome Album because that just struck me as cringe. I couldn't even do that. So I came up with this idea of a character called Daddy Stingray, right? And this came from one of my kids looking at a picture or something and saying, oh, is that the Daddy Stingray? And then that just kind of stuck in my head that that was a good name. And I came out with Daddy Stingray Sweet Talking Symphony. And I came up with a whole backstory. So now we're like getting into this whole idea of fanboy energy. It's not just I recorded a song. It's I came up with a persona. Daddy Stingray lives in a cave underneath a volcano. He only emerges once every 15,000 years. to share the songs of from the gods of chaos and creation. And for the first time in history, this music has been captured. Behold the sweet talking symphony. I was having fun with it, right? Then I realized I had these two characters, right? I didn't know how to pull them together and say, okay, you guys can, meaning employers out there, you can hire me because I have more skills than just producing conferences. Because the problem I had was there was this guy, Dave Hoffman, who has a book called Producing Success, which to me, that guy's like a corporate guy. He's, you know, he's works for the man. He's wearing a tie. He expects you guys to take your job very seriously. And then there's Daddy Stingray, who's supposed to be like a subversive rock star with a ridiculous backstory, which means daydreaming, imagination. And I'm like, these guys have got to hate each other. Like they hate each other. There's no way I'm going to get one person to agree that these two separate things. I'm going to look like I don't know what I'm doing. Like I have no, like I'm aimless in life. But to me, I felt like I had been progressing in terms of putting things out there professionally. And already I want to point out, you know, for those of you who feel stuck in a corporate environment, you can take little projects and find new skills and then put them out there as a portfolio piece. So one day I'm still sort of stuck in the rat race of producing these events. It was summertime and it was winter. It was wintertime of 2018 towards the end of the year. I saw a map. I just remember it was a map of the Hudson Valley. And just a word popped into my head, Hudson Valley Music Summit. And I thought, ooh, that's interesting. Okay, because I'm a musician. And so going into, it's a new industry. It's not competing with my, at the time, it was actually an energy industry conference company I was working for. So there's no conflict of interest. And I got lucky in that the first few people I reached out to about participating said it sounded like a great idea. And I mean, it's just the name at this point. I just said, what do you think about this? And they said, yes. So I kind of, you know, wrote them down as having buy-in and started reaching out to strangers. And what it turned into was a industry conference. It was in, I ran it in 2019, Kingston, New York, about 20 minutes from the town of Woodstock. And it was less than a week before the 50th anniversary of the Woodstock concert, which is named after that town. I kind of like to joke that I pulled my conference off. They did not have the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. So I did it. I claim that it was mine, but, you know, it was a business-to-business conference. And, you know, the main thing why I view that as a triumph was I brought together those two personalities because it was produced by Dave Hoffman, who is a conference professional. That's who you want to feel confident going to a conference with. But it was hosted by Daddy Stingray, who, for lack of a better description, I'm one of you. I'm also creative. I'm also a musician. I get it. You know, when you move away from level of success or fan base, we both get the idea of trying to put something out there that we've created. And, I think it was a success in the industry. I had about 300 people there. We had some stars who I knew. We had Tracy Bonham, who was a huge hit, had a huge hit in the 90s. We had Dennis Dunaway, the bass player from the original Alice Cooper band, the guy who wrote you know, all the hits like School's Out. We had Michelle Schacht was there. We had some agent. I mean, and it was for the, it wasn't even for them per se as much as it was for the agents, the managers, the record label. So we had a bunch of names. It was, you know, I was very happy that I was able to pull that off. And so there were some clues there that I didn't know what they were then, but there were two things that were interesting was I tried to make it expensive enough that it would discourage amateurs from coming. That was really, I wasn't trying to take money from struggling artists, but I wanted to make sure it was a business to business conference. This is for people who are professionals. They're willing to invest in their career. Yet, a couple of fans bought tickets, right? So they spent a couple hundred dollars to come because they wanted, they told me they wanted to see and meet Michelle Schacht, right? And I'm like, wow, that's interesting. I didn't know about the whole fandom world at that point. So it was just a note filed away in the back of my head. There was also a comic book artist who bought a table there because she wanted to do merch for bands, right? Mm-hmm. So I noticed that overlap between the comic art and the music art world. So what I was going to do was in the in-between time, I started getting the idea of running what I call the Comics and Vinyl Rock and Roll Collector Show. I was just going to rent a room in a hotel, have people with cardboard boxes selling their comics, selling their records. And it was just going to be another touch point. So I didn't have to beat people over the head with the same message for the 2020 version that ended up getting canceled. February 2020, I ran the Music Video Film Festival, which is another idea I came up with, additional touch point. It was meant to be educational. Educational was still like in my, it was kind of in my blood. I didn't even know how to think of it, just a purely consumer event at that point. And we had bands from throughout the country come and share their music videos. We had the Suffers came in from Houston. I remember when I was looking at all the bands, all the submissions, that was the first one that made me sit up and be like, oh, this song is amazing. We had Pterodactyl Problems from Toronto, Bobby Bryson from South Carolina, and Jackson Whalen, who's actually one of the winners. He was from Massachusetts. The rest of them were from around here. And what was really special was I reached out and got one of the judges was Mark Goodman, who was the very first VJ on MTV. So it was real meaningful to me that he, that I got buy-in from, of all the people on the planet, someone, he used to live in the area, but it really, really meant a lot. We had him, we had Alan Light, who was his DJ partner, another well-known journalist in the music world. Real nice guy. He was at my other event too. And we had Vivo was there they supported us. So it was going well. It was February 2020. And then I was going to run an investment conference in June of 2020 because that was going to pay the bills. And, you know, the joke I tell everyone is, I don't know if you picked up a newspaper in March of 2020, but, you know, listen, I have my own self-esteem issues. So sometimes I kind of forget that I didn't quit. You know, I didn't, it wasn't like hey, why didn't you follow through? Okay. There was a global pandemic. I mean, maybe I could have plowed through that, but I'm not sure what I would have done. So I backed everything off. I backed off on everything. That happened. And that's sort of why the name Catastrophicon is like a good name, right? Because we are, it's Catastrophicon. One of the things I tell people is you have to come because you can only come to the first year of an event once. That's when you get the bragging rights. And I was calling it year one because that's like a Batman reference. But I just realized this week, it's not year one. It is year zero after the catastrophe. Okay. This is year zero. You have to come to this event. So I hope I'm answering whatever question you asked. I'm just trying to tell you where this came from, how I hope other people can listen to this and hear how if you pay attention and you learn it, what your own skills are, what your own connections are, and allow other people to come to you with what they like, you can build something. So I had this comic book idea in the back of my head. And when we opened up again, I started going to comic book shows and just to get business cards of vendors and stuff. And then I became aware of this whole autograph culture, which I just really didn't know. I personally had never paid for an autograph. I didn't understand the whole concept of collecting these things. And a friend of mine actually called me up and after I started going to these shows and now I was, you know, starting to look, should I maybe do something like this? He called me up and he said he was going on a tour of Camp Nobby Bosco, which is where Friday the 13th was filmed, because he's from DC. And he said, hey, isn't this near you? I mean, it lives far enough away that it's close enough. It's like an hour drive. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's near me. He's like, didn't you go to camp here? I thought that that was an urban legend because I went there in like maybe 81 or so. They told us Friday the 13th was filmed there. But then when I got older, I said it, I told that to people and they said, no, it's my camp. And I was like, oh, well, that's probably just what you tell kids to scare them. No, here it was. This was the camp. And it's giving a tour. And I'm like, all right, you know, I'll check it out. You know, I want to hang out with my friend anyway. And I'm a nostalgic guy. So we go there and, you know, it was my camp. And it was funny because I was a little bit of a celebrity myself because I actually went to camp there. And I was looking around and I was really now I'm really absorbing the love that these fans have. And like, I hadn't really, until I experienced, I didn't really get it. Now I'm like, no, they go so deep into it and it means so much to them and their collections mean everything and being on the set means everything. And I'm like, when I was there in 1981, this didn't exist. Like there was no such thing as 40 some odd years of Friday the 13th movies and fandom. It wasn't a thing. It was one movie, I think. I mean, I don't know if the other one's out yet. I had no idea. And I realized that I had the luck of experiencing what it was probably like to be at Mount Sinai when the Bible was handed down to the people. And then thousands of years later, it's still a thing, right? And it went in so many different directions. It was sort of the same idea. And I had a whiskey nip in my pocket. So I poured it out and I took some water from the lake and kept it as a souvenir because I was, yeah, I felt like I was onto something. I eventually got Ari Lehman to sign it. So I have a signed bottle of water from Jason, the boy in the lake. Nice. And that was when I realized something was there. So I started really focusing on these fan conventions. And I recognized that horror has some really fanatical fans. They really love their stuff. And I thought horror tied into rock and roll just because of the attitude, right? And I think everyone thinks of, not everyone, everyone has their own ideas, but one way to view rock and roll, rock and roll is very virtuosic. We all know how great these bands are, but at the same time, you kind of like to think that you could plug in a guitar and just start pounding away and make a great rock and roll song, right? And so there's this idea that great rock and roll needs an attitude. It needs a certain kind of I don't care attitude. I'm going to piss off my parents' attitude. I'm going to annoy the neighbor's attitude. And that's very similar to what horror is about, too, right? And I recognize that, I was looking at the different genres and I wanted this, even before I realized it, I realized I want this DIY idea, this do-it-yourself idea that you can come in and not just be a fan and watch something, you can participate. And I recognize that just like rock and roll, if you plug in and get the right idea, you can have something there. With horror, I recognize that their fans are a little bit forgiving of certain, amateurishness, right? Things looking unreal, acting being bad. They'll watch that movie and they'll still love it for various reasons if you have the right idea and it's executed with the right attitude, whatever that, however you define that. I think other genres like science fiction, they're not going to really, it's not going to fly if you have continuity problems or if your laser gun looks phony. That's just my opinion. I like the stuff where the it's not the re it's the creativity, not the realism that you want to go for.
Yeah.
And so anyway, then again, with this, I started investigating it while I was going through the Launch 1000 program, and I started asking people questions. And some people, they all had different answers. That made it very difficult because when you launch a business, you want a very specific idea so that you can come up with a minimum viable product and sell that without all the bells and whistles, because that's where everything's going to build from. But the people I spoke to told me they liked the joy of discovery. They like the first few people I talked to were friends. They went to these things because their friends dragged them to them, these cons, and they had a good time. But their favorite thing was meeting up in the hallway afterwards and sharing what they had found in the vendor room. So the entire thrust of this was the variability. There was no one thing that people wanted that I could really sell. So I started conceiving this idea, and when I finally decided to see who was available, like I mentioned earlier, Ari was one of the first people that came on board. So I had that whole my whole theme was that was the bullseye of what I was looking to promote with this event. And then what really made me pull the trigger was when I stepped on the campus or into the halls of Reed Castle. So Reed Castle, a lot of colleges will have a castle on campus. Reed Castle's from the 1800s. I think it predates the college. I'm not sure, but it is old. And it has, you walk in there and it's got dark wooden paneling and it's got fireplaces in every room and there's hallways. It's not just one big room. There's all different rooms. There's a secret door in there. There's a secret way onto the balcony. And I just did a ghost tour with one of my volunteers who was a Master of Fine Arts students at the campus. And she showed me the cemetery out back where the nuns have been buried since the 1800s. So it's haunted, right? But I mean, I didn't know all that. No, I sort of did know all that the first time I saw it. I go, I have to do it here. This has to be a horror convention. This is, whatever force makes things happen has brought me to this moment. And so I then secured a date and I reached out to see if other people were involved. And then once you have something and start putting the idea out there, people start coming to me and saying they have guests who want to get involved. And people started saying they wanted to vend. I'm like, wow, this has never happened before. When I do, as I mentioned earlier, with the financial conferences I'm used to doing, you do a lot of outreach and you do outreach and you'll call someone 20 times before they say yes. And this time people were coming to me, which was like, I've never sold a product like that before. So it's still difficult being the pilot here. I was at, it was actually, a growth experience because I was working full time when I first started. Again, it was that same rat, what's it called? The rat wheel, the rat race, the hamster wheel type job, because I had regressed because of COVID. I just went back to my old, what I was used to. And I was feeling a lot of tension between the two projects, right? And this was getting so big that I was starting to feel, before I even realized it consciously, something was telling me, like, you've finally been given an opportunity to take a stand and give 100% to this. So I was promoting the event and I went to Phil Lesh was playing at the Capitol Theater. It was for his 80 something birthday in Porchester, New York, up near here. So I didn't even realize that I don't know if you know what Shakedown Street is. Okay, so they just Dead and Company just played at the at Citi Field, and when the Grateful Dead tours, or whatever it is now, back when the Grateful Dead was around, the people would follow them around. They would set up vendor tables and they would sell like T-shirts and artwork and stuff like that. And that's how the people, if I understand correctly, the people who would tour with the Grateful Dead, that was their job. So they would go from town to town and they would sell their stuff, and that's enough for them to get gas money, food money, and buy their next ticket. And so it's a huge part of any Grateful Dead show. And the bands that have spawned off that, which now that I think about it, that's all fanboy energy, right? Because that once dead, once Jerry Garcia died, the rest of these things took off, the whole jam band scene. So anyway, they actually have that at the parking lot near the train station in Port Chester, right near the Capitol Theater. So I went there and I was just talking up my event because that's what I do now, One Track Mind. And there was a tarot card reader. She was selling Grateful Dead tarot cards, right? And she's like, I'll do a reading. So I'm like, all right, why not? And I don't remember even what it was called, but the picture, there were two horses. It was a guy riding two horses. And she said, this means that you're being pulled in two different directions, right? I wish I remember what the card was. But she said, what, you're being pulled in two different directions. I go, oh yeah, that's for sure. What does it mean? And she said, the one thing you need to realize is even though these horses are pulling you in different directions, you're the driver. Okay, so that means you have to make the decisions, right? And I was like, holy shit, she's right. I have to remember that, even if I have a job, even if I'm responsible for people, this is my response, this is my opportunity to step up and be a leader, because it's sort of what I'm being called on to do. And a few weeks after that, I decided to quit my job because I thought, I think the phrase is memento mori, we all must die. I'm not gonna, nothing's gonna happen that's gonna, I think if I didn't quit my job, this Catastrophicon wouldn't have reached its potential. And then I would be just on a cycle of having half-assed event after half-assed event and not recommitting to something. So it's still a lot, even working full time. Then I now have so many different moving parts, because you asked about how it was different from what I was used to. So there's the vendors, and it's not just a simple matter of signing them up. You want to make sure that they're good for the show. That's half the reason people are going. In these professional settings, it's a lot more simple to decide who belongs there. And if they don't belong there, there's no reason for them to go, because they're spending tens of thousands of dollars, right? They'll make that decision for you. Here, you kind of want to curate a little bit. And then same with the guests. Every guest, I think, adds to the show, but you kind of want, so there's a reason I was happy to have six warriors and two people from Friday 13th series and two people from the Nightmare on Elm Street 5, because then people looking for autographs could come for these little nexus of what they love. We have a cosplayer who specializes in, his name is Dream Killer cosplay. He's a very realistic Freddy Krueger, so he's going to be there for the photos with Beatrice Bopley and Erica Anderson, who are both in the in part five. There's another guy named Uncle Creepy who did a his name's Steve Barton, and he did a documentary, Never Sleep Again. So there's stuff for those fans, and I just need to get a critical mass, so there's a little bit of a nexus where those fans can go get their fill, and then they can go enjoy everything else. We also have Never Hike Alone. That's another one of my early phone calls or emails, was to Vincent DeSanti, who, that's a fan film, and he's on our crowdfunding panel because he did a real successful crowdfund, and he's working on his third sequel to that fan film for Friday the 13th. I might not have mentioned it's Friday the 13th. And if you see their trailer online, it's amazing just in terms of the quality. It looks like it's real movie. Some fan films are better than others, and this one looks really good. And again, what is that? That's fanboy energy. What makes someone do a fan film? And it's, I don't really know him at all, but if it were me and I were a filmmaker, this is your platform to make yourself get to the next level. In fact, that was one I forgot to mention. That was one of my goals with the Music Video Film Festival. After the first time I went through launch, that was the incubator. That was during COVID, and I came up with this website called videostro.com, which was designed to bring together filmmakers and musicians who wanted to film music videos. And the idea I had was that if you're a musician, you need this other bit of media to help you compete and cut through all the noise, because there's just so much competition, and the video is a perfect way to do that. And if you're a filmmaker, it's probably for newer filmmakers because they want to build up a portfolio. And I didn't even think, I didn't even, I'm actually, now that I'm saying it, I didn't even realize this connection, because I put that to the side when I started working on this. But the example I was giving is if you're a horror director, an aspiring horror director, and you want to show how well you can, film zombies, you want to hook up with a heavy metal band and do their video, right? That's perfect. So it does all come full circle. I'm trying to think. We're also going to have Dungeons and Dragons is going to be happening throughout the day. I don't know. What else can I tell you?
I mean, it sounds great. There's so much exciting stuff going on. I mentioned before we started recording that I've already bought my ticket, so I will be there. And I'm really excited for our listeners to hear about this. And I hope that they pick up tickets too, because I think that, this fanboy energy spirit that you talk about is like very enticing, you know? And I think it's like a really exciting combination of like passion and like a kind of grassroots, like do it yourself spirit that, you know, and like it's all really good stuff, and I'm really looking forward to it. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. We're really hoping to get a huge crowd. I just can't emphasize enough being part of, you know, you can't tell the future, right? So you don't know when you're in the right place in the right time. But if this lasts 10 years, 20 years, you want to be there in the first year. And this is the year where I can get away with some mistakes because everyone knows it's the first year and we can laugh about it. You can't really laugh about it in year five because you're supposed to know better by then. But this is the year where everyone I talk to, you know, you say hi to me there, remind me that where we met, tell me where you heard about this, because this show is for you. I mean, all shows are for the audience, but the other thing to bear in mind, there's more and more streaming services happening more and more. As technology gets better, it's easy for an indie company to come up with a new streaming service, right? And then there's more content out there. And that means that there's more calls for shows like this. And the more shows like this, it's harder for us, the promoters, because we have more competition, but it's better for the fans. It's better for the vendors, better for the guests, because you guys have choices. You have more input. And I'm telling you, now is the year you get my ear for that input to know how I make you choose to come to me instead of, it's July 15th. So I need you to choose to come to me instead of going to the beach, you know, or whatever else, wherever else you want to spend your time. And that is, you know, I have big aspirations, big ideas. You know, I went to Disney a few years ago and I realized that, you know, I remember this is all part of the journey of me realizing how exciting fandom actually is, because it wasn't part of my blood before then. I don't want to say cynical, but I was the role of a parent. You know, you're half interested. Suddenly I'm standing on the deck of the Millennium Falcon. This is in Disney and their Smuggler's Run line. And suddenly I'm pure fanboy. I'm just like bursting at the seams. I cannot believe I'm here. This is amazing. So we do have the Empire Saber Guild is coming, one of the cosplay groups. So if you like that, that's going to be a lot of fun if you're into Star Wars. But more to the point, not every franchise is owned by Disney. Not yet. Anyway, but that means that there's a tons of movies and TV shows, especially older ones that aren't even in production anymore, that don't have the ability to build a theme park. So you're not going to walk on their sacred land. So that's where cosplayers come in. And that's where, I don't know what's going to happen, but I would like to be able to work with these streaming services who are trying to promote their shows and come up with a traveling version of it. You know, there's virtual reality is becoming more and more accessible. My job is not to produce, I have my own content I want to produce, you know, that maybe one day I'll get to write my own stories, but really right now I'm building a platform for the people who have, you know, I want to bring together people who have virtual reality technology with people who have a comic book story with an animator to come out with their new 3D ride of a new franchise, you know, like shows like this are where that can happen. You get in front of those fans and then you can travel the country. In a way, I was thinking catastrophic on sort of like the anti-Disney. Not that I have a problem with Disney, but the idea is that it's more for adults. It's not only for adults, but I'm saying it's not as childish as the way Disney is meant to be, because it's got that edge, but also that it's traveling. Right now I only have one, but the point is it's here. You don't have to go to, it's not just in Disney. I mean, I assume that if anyone who does anything at my show can do it somewhere else in the other part of the country. And then the other thing is that it's not that juggernaut where, you know, Disney is really the industry standard of these kinds of movies. This is for the rest of us who maybe we don't have Disney backing us up and we want to figure out how to do it on our own. So that's, you know, so I don't mean anti-Disney in any kind of antagonistic kind of way, but like it gives us everything that we love out of Disney and give it to someone else. And that's the whole thing. I keep kind of coming back to that theme. How do we do something different?
That's super important too, because like again, yeah, no disrespect to Disney, but we are in a world where there is a, decreasingly small number of corporations who control what we see and what we watch and what we hear. And so giving space to those other voices is super important too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Well, thank you again so much for joining us. This has been really great. And yeah, I'm very excited to see you at Catastrophicon in a few weeks.
Me too. Yeah, look forward to me in person.
All right, listeners, please check it out. You're going to want to get your tickets and yeah, come see us there. All right, thank you so much for listening.
The website is catastrophicon.com. And you can also go cataconny.com, cataconny.com. cataconny.com. And if you Google Catastrophicon, it looks like I've done a pretty good job of getting the word out there. So you should be able to find it.
Absolutely. And I'll put the URL in the show notes too. Okay.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. It is now time to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.